want to adopt the double system like everybody else has of the assembly and school board separate, they certainly have the right to do so, but you're given the option. Is there any question on that? Does anybody have any questions about it or wants to contest it? But if we have any questions about them, I think we'll go through the whole batch and then maybe return and get an item-by-item approval or disapproval on each one. Well, if there's no questions on that one, we'll move on to the next paragraph. All municipalities which incorporate or reclassify after the effective date of this act, except municipalities which unify, will receive transitional grants of $10 per registered voter. There will be a minimum of $25,000 for municipalities having or assuming the school power. This, in essence, means that whenever a fourth-class city, which will shortly become a second-class city, wants to assume the school power and becomes then a first-class city, they will have this additional $25,000 transitional grant, similar to the grants that we currently give boroughs when they form, to fund some of the expenses of assuming the school power. It's assumed that there'll be some possibly some election expenses and some office expenses and other expenses, and this will provide a little transitional aid, nothing overpowering, but at least somewhat helpful. Ed, did you get copy?
That's what I'm looking for now.
Oh, okay.
Are we going to question say as we go along here?
Yeah, question them as we go along. We'll do the approvals or the disapprovals after we've gone over the whole batch, because one thing interrelates with the other. But if you have any questions, no, send off on them now.
What is the exception here for unified government?
Well, the unified government, just using Juneau as an example, we already got our transitional grant for becoming a borough when we organized as a borough. So it wasn't felt that just the fact that we unified a city and a borough, we certainly wouldn't have been eligible for an additional $25,000. In other words, when a borough is formed, they get $25,000 anyway, and so you shouldn't give it to them a second time, is what it amounts to, just because they unified.
Well, would they receive the difference between the $25,000 and the $10 per registered voter?
They've already gotten everything because they were first class cities beforehand and unified into a combined city and borough. Any additional questions? If not, I'll go on to the next paragraph. We can come back to any of these if anybody has any questions. The election of borough assemblies, city council, and school boards will be held every 2 years on the same date as the state election, unless a locality provides by ordinance for different terms, which may not exceed 4 years in length. If a locality chooses to have a different term, it will, of course, have elections in odd numbers years, but they will still take place on the second Tuesday after the first Monday in November. In other words, it will be mandatory to have the November elections. It will not be mandatory to have them every 2 years because the board, the municipality will have the option of going by the 2-year route if they want to, simply by passing an ordinance to that effect. But they will, as a primarily a money-saving thing.
I want to mention this particular point. The arguments, if we're going to adopt this, we better get the arguments against it because there's a difference of opinion on this. The arguments against it will say, for example, that we have so many things on the ballot that we're going to get all mixed up, and it's going to be so big, you know, like the last bond election. And they're going to say that it's so much better to have it a month before because, you know, it simplifies things and so forth. Well, during the course of my campaign, I don't know how many of you fellas went there. I went door to door talking to people. I'd say that 9 out of 10 absolutely wondered why you had 2 separate elections. They all thought it would be much better to have it at the same time. They do it in Denver, they do it in New York, they do it in Des Moines, Iowa, and other places, and they have the same complications and problems we have. In other words, there's arguments you could use against this. And we feel, at least I feel, and the subcommittee felt, that certainly this is worth trying for the convenience of the voter, because in a special municipal election, statistics show that many times only about 40 to 50 to 60% at the most of the people that vote in the general election will come out in the municipal election. So you get a minority vote many times. So they felt that you got a risk of a lot of things on the ballot, but it would be better all the way around to get more people voting and take it to the general election and get it all over at once, admitting that there's arguments against it. Everybody concedes that you can make a good case either way on this one. But we felt that, and again, it's something that you're going to probably try to get an amendment on the floor. Somebody will probably try to amend this out. That's one of the things that we should know in advance in the committee what the arguments are, and I think it's a good time as any to talk about it.
Senator Rader?
Let me ask a question. Why could, if a community, this might work very well in some communities and not in other communities, depending upon the length of the ballot, why can't we make this, instead of just the terms also being subject to a local ordinance, and saying an off year, why don't you let... why don't we leave it up to the local community? If they will to spend the money, this is to save money and for convenience.
Is that the type of a decision
that could just as well be made by the city individually as by us for them, unless there's some advantage in having a statewide thing all at once? I don't know what that is. It didn't occur to me at the moment.
Well, John, we thought about that. And the point is, if you put that in, then right now, all of them, you have to have an affirmative change of ordinance, because right now they provide for October elections.
Well, no, why don't we pass it like this, saying that this shall be it unless...
Subsequent to the day of this act.
Yeah, that they alter it.
Well, it's certainly a compromise, I mean, but I certainly don't want it to say that by local ordinance they can have it, because they already got the local ordinances. You aren't changing the law any, because that's the law right now, that they can do it by ordinance, you know, on their own.
Well, they're prohibited now.
No. They have it in October.
They're prohibited from changing it.
The only thing I can say, John, it's again, I don't think the municipalities like it. I don't think certain city managers like it. I don't think certain professional city people like it.
Like what?
Like the idea of having a November election. They like it in October for varied reasons. I think that we're representing more than city managers and more than professional people in municipalities. And my feeling is that we're representing everybody, and it's more convenient for everybody to have it at all at the same time. Again, I admit I could be wrong. I mean, that's basically, John, what it is. I'd like to see it tried and then let them change the law back to October if it doesn't work. But I bet you it works.
Here's the thing about it. Certainly from the point of view of Anchorage, when you're voting for 14 representatives and 7 senators, there's 2 for each office, and then there's 2 for all the rest of the offices, you end up with a ballot which now has, 40 or 50 names on it. Now, that's not true, certainly in Bethel, and maybe it's not true in Juneau to the same extent. But does it make any difference to Fairbanks, for example, if Anchorage... We want to have an October election.
Well, John, like I say, you got a good argument. That was make the argument. The only thing I can say to you is, I understand it's going to be reapportionment. They're going to, you know, we're going to have these districts divided up. It's not going to be mass districts. And again, the arguments you give are good ones.
Maybe so.
I just think, for the benefit of the people, that maybe in the long run, and again, it commits up to the committee. Hell, they can do what they want. You can vote this out. But that's my feeling on it.
What do you say for the benefit of the people? If the people of a particular area want it differently, why not let them do it?
Well, what'll happen, John? You got inertia. I just think that the people in the administrative local government will want to keep it in October. They won't change it, and you know you got to organize people to change it. I'd rather have the burden shift. I'd rather have it in, and then, if it doesn't work, have it go back. Rather than right now, I just don't think that anybody will change it if you make it optional.
John will have 7 districts in Anchorage, why it's not going to be such
right.
a big ballot. I wouldn't worry about it.
You're right, if that's what happens.
That's what I understand definitely is going to happen.
Right?
Yeah.
You know something I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I just got...
There's 2 caucus decisions on it, so it looks like...
Well, Mr. Chairman, don't you think that actually what they're doing now, they're separating the local government problem from the state problems by having it at different times? And if we put it all together, wouldn't it tend to confuse some of the people a little more?
Again, the only thing you can go red is on other areas. That's an argument. But other areas, they don't seem to have the problem.
Well,
they
bother in my area at all.
I mean, I'm thinking
the only place
of Oregon
is Anchorage.
Or California or somewhere. They don't have any problem at all. Minneapolis. Again, it's a good... Well, I'm glad we talked it over, because you're going to get this. You know.
Mr. Chairman, one technical point to keep in mind, if you permit both the terms and the date of elections to be set by local ordinance, is that... If you leave the dates of election a local option, possibly a borough may set one date for its election, and a city within the borough may set another date. That's part of the reasoning of trying to bind them to the same set date.
Mr. Chair, I have a slightly, maybe, I don't want to change the subject until this is finished.
We're finished. I mean, I have no more to say.
Well, let's we're not making decisions on these until we have a complete go-through, so just keep them back in mind, and go ahead with another point. Then.
Well, another point that is not mentioned in the summary, but I observe in the statute itself that the qualifications of the city council members on assembly are determined page 18, for example, deals with assembly vacancies.
Line 2.
When the borough first came into effect, the Anchorage City Council happened to be on the council at that time. We considered the possibility of making our council representatives to the assembly wild cards, so that we could pick out of the nine and send any five we wanted on any given occasion. I don't see anything in this modification which prohibits that. We, after much debate and argument, decided not to do it, but I don't think there's anything in existing law which prohibits it. And it seems to me that you're not going to have any continuity on those assemblies if those councils can shuffle around their membership, and maybe it's desirable not to allow them to shuffle, but that seems to me that's a policy question that we ought to consider.
Yeah, I never even thought of that possibility. That's
Greg, did you? I didn't think of it either.
You mean that under existing law, you could have five councilmen show up one week and could be a different five, a different group of councilmen the next week?
I've got to find the section that appoints them, and I don't think there's any change in it.
You want staggered? Is that what you're saying?
Well, all right, it's in page 15, 29, line 1, 29-23-030. Members of the assembly are appointed or elected according to the motion. Okay. Line 4. Members representing first-class cities are appointed by and from the city councils unless provided by otherwise by city charter ordinance. We considered and drafted and debated an ordinance which would allow us to send any one of the nine that we wanted at any time to the borough assembly.
Rather than one permanent.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, page 15, line 12, I think, guards against that.
Yeah, 12 to 14.
There are elections held.
Line 12 to 14. City councilman on the assembly.
Okay. My apologies, it's solved. I don't think that's an existing law, Greg.
No, sir, it isn't.
Yeah, okay.
You got to give those boys credit there.
That's a nice sales point for the new bill.
Bill? The council, did the committee, drafting committee specifically put it in for that reason?
Specifically, yes. This problem has come up in the past in various areas.
Thank you for your help.
Hey, we'll pick up paragraph 4 here. School budget items are excluded from the items and appropriation ordinances which a borough chairman may strike or reduce by veto. Also, 2/3 of the assembly rather than 3/4 can override a veto. Of course, under current law, the chairman can only veto the total appropriation. Under the proposed
law, he'll have a line item.
Yeah, under the proposed new code, he could have a line item option, and it was felt by some of the school people that the way the thing was worded, he might even have line item veto over portions of the school budget, and that was not the intention of the drafters of the code. So this would just solidify that position and make it. We'll have language in there to make it crystal clear that under no circumstances will the borough chairman have the right to line item a school board appropriation. Any questions on that? Also, as
it's existing law.
Yeah, because we've built in a real fight in existing law, where they have to veto the whole budget.
Yeah, that's it.
And I'm not just too sure that you want to go that route.
You want to change it?
I prefer to have him. If you're going to give him line item veto on the other, give him line item veto on the total budget school.
Well, frankly, I don't agree with you, but if I wanted to defeat this whole municipal code, I couldn't think of a better way to do it than to put that provision in there.
You're quite likely right. The only thing is that right now you're facing the problems that the chairman vetoes a school budget because they're going to pick up a federal program that has X number of dollars impact 3 years down the line. And he has to veto the whole budget and fight it out on those lines till they remove that program.
Of course, the theory is that the school board, in its wisdom, produces a budget, and the assembly, in its wisdom, either adopts it as is or reduces it and adopts it. But once it's gone through that process, the school budget then is supposedly, you know, locked in. And they,
cost the school board doesn't set the mill rate.
No.
Clem, excuse me.
Go ahead.
We really went into this one in some extensive details you probably can sense. And our feeling ultimately came to the conclusion that if you're going to do that, do it by separate bill and don't jeopardize months and years of work that went into the thing. That's basically why, well, you know what had happened. Well, isn't that basically the way your drafting committee felt, Bill?
We very carefully left this.
Okay,
Clem,
that's what happened. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire whether the Assembly has the present ability to line item, in your view, line item provisions in the budget?
They approve a total budget.
The Assembly, too?
Yes. Because the school board people are elected by the same people that elect the Assembly.
I understand the argument. Is that presently in here?
Yes.
Well, it's in the, it hasn't been spelled out clearly as it is proposed to be in the committee amendment. It's spelled out about the same way it is in present law, and it's been subject to an opinion that, in fact, they do not have any line item power in the school board.
Okay.
Next item would be second class. Well, I'm going to interrupt myself here just 1 minute and repeat one statement we've made several times, and that is that in line with what we were just talking about, there's very little that's, you know, creating a brave new world in this in these amendments that Ed and I have been working over, as is the case with the basic code, because our basic goal has been to codify, and if somebody has something new and exciting and innovative, our hope is that they'll propose it as separate legislation and it can either rise or fall on its own merits. But we'll still get a good, strong codification out of the thing on which to build in future years. And that, I just kind of repeat that constantly just so we'll keep in mind.
It's awful tempting, Clem, a lot of, you know, to try to solve basic problems in this. We've been 6 years.
Okay, fine, I can understand it.
Okay.
At one point, Ed and I had sort of solved all the problems that face municipal governments in Alaska, but we decided we couldn't get it through. City council members may be elected by districts as well as at large.
That's present law.
Yeah, except it isn't presently in the code, I think. Isn't that the way it worked out?
It's not specifically stated. I don't think it is in present law either. It's done by home rule charter.
Home rule, Clem, not general rule.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
But this would make it specific that they could be. Okay, second-class cities, which are present fourth-class cities, may submit an annual statement of income and expenditure to the local affairs agency in place of an audit. The state payment of shared revenues is contingent on the submittal of these audits or statements. Now, at the present time, the present law, I think I'm right on this, Greg, is that actually they're not required to make any sort of a statement at all, not even, you know, an annual audit or anything. So our first consideration was, well, they ought to submit an annual audit, but that implies CPAs and everything else. So, in the case of a village with 50 people in it, that's just asking, you know, 1,000% too much. So what was it? Just a simple statement of income and expenditures to give the local affairs agency not only some statistical data, but some information on which to base, you know, future action one day or another. And plus, of course, the state payment of shared revenues would be consistent with the same thing. That is, the statement of expenses would show that they spent so much money for a fire truck. Well, this might entitle them to the fire shared revenues and so forth.
Mr. Chairman, there's a basic philosophical change here as I view it. You've taken first, second, and third class cities, lumped them in together as first class cities, and then created second class cities to replace fourth class cities, right?
No, sir. First class cities are still first class cities with the school power. Basically, second, third, and fourth class cities become second class cities and do not have the school power.
No, sir. First, second, and third class cities have been put.
All right, you're right.
In the first, and our present fourth class is behind the second class.
Yeah, because present rule. Yeah, present class still.
Basically, you know, they act as a legislature in their own. Home rules have the powers of the legislature, unless restricted by state law. So,
a home rule city must be a city of the first class under the Constitution.
Oh, I know that.
Which adopts a home rule charter.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can the staff tell me why we're doing this? Or can you, or can Ed, or can somebody?
Billy Berry explained it very well the other day.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, but
you weren't supposed to be there. It was a subcommittee.
The question is why the classifications are cut down. Basically, and heavens knows I'm no expert in city government, having been in boroughs since I've been in municipal government, there is no real meaningful distinction between the first, second, and third class cities. They each currently have approximately the same authorities. It's spelled out slightly differently, and there is not enough difference in what they can do to justify the different classes of cities. There are certain anomalies, that are relatively senseless. For example, of zoning a second-class city can't zone, whereas a first, third, and fourth can. But outside of drafting anomalies, there are no meaningful distinctions, which is why the combination.
And why did we? That is because we continued to graft additional powers on the second, third, and on the third and fourth. For example, is that the reason?
Yes, each of them have been treated somewhat separately, and you have basically the same concept with just slightly different treatment in each one.
A lot of people have the impression that fourth class, you know, has the least powers, and it goes on up to first. But as I understand Bill's remarks the other day, this isn't necessarily the case. That particularly in second, third, second, and first, you know, you don't get up to a more and more powerful thing at all. It just there's a, it's just a jumble. One has more than another, but it doesn't have anything to do with this. Did you?
The historical accident.
I mean, it's a basic philosophy on a theoretical. If you look at our Constitution and you understand local government here, on if they really had distinctions, you know, and you could pick up additional powers, you could come in as a fourth, move up to a third, a second, and a first. But what you're telling me is that that isn't the existing law, and we're not providing that flexibility.
Right.
You know, basically, Cliff, if you didn't have Haynesboro, you'd only have first and second class cities and first and second class boroughs. But you got the Haynesboro, so we put third class borough, not to upset that. But the important thing, I think, is the distinction between school powers and non-school powers. All we did was make first-class cities out of everything that was now first, second, and third. Fundamentally, that's what we did. Then we made the fourth-class cities second-class in order not to impose school burdens on them and to let the villages operate, and it sounds better to be second-class and fourth-class, to be honest with you.
That's not true. You've been second-class for a long time.
Willie, you're too literal. But it doesn't change it to... That's fundamentally, I guess, what we're
Mr. Chairman, to answer Mr. Tilliard's point more correctly, I missed his point originally, and I'm sorry. The requirement for reports, audits from first-class cities is made expressly binding on home rule cities, too, in the section that lists all the binders on home rule governments.
One other question, Mr. Chairman. Can existing second- and third-class cities that actually have the school power, do they have a school
plan? Yeah, they do. Yeah.
All right. Can they opt to go second class and have the state pay for their educational system?
Only if they dispose of, through dissolution, they can do it. But that would be pretty complicated because all of them end up with bond indebtedness.
Well, the state's got to agree to accept their bond indebtedness. If the state doesn't agree, I don't see how they can do it legally.
Can they opt here, fellas?
Existing second and third?
Yeah.
Under the transitional provisions, which haven't been changed in the SB 113, any city over 400 persons is a first-class city. If you have a second- and third-class city now, which is over 400, it will become first-class automatically. Fourth-class cities, however, existing fourth-class cities only become second-class cities. They're not, whether they have 400 persons or not. First, second, and third class cities which have under 400 people, this is a transitional problem. There are about 20 small communities involved, and the local boundary commission is supposed to make a determination as to what their classification will be, first or second class. And this is appealable to the legislature within the first 2 years of the code. This provision, it's on page two and three, has been in the code since its inception in 1965.
Are you answering this question? Assume right now that you're a third or second class city and you have school powers. Okay, right now. Okay, you go into the new code and this town decides that we don't want to carry the school powers anymore. We want to become a second class city now and let the state pay for the school. Now they dissolve. See? Now do they have a legal right to do this is what you're asking in the code. Do they have a legal right to do that and then dump it on the state? Isn't that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the answer, Greg?
If you're second or third over 400, no. If you're second or third under 400, the local boundary commission is going to make the determination. Normally, you cannot declassify, and it will also be difficult to dissolve under the code, too, as under present law. That part of the code has been enacted as present law already.
Present law does allow you to re-look this up because we've got a city now that its only way out is dissolution, really. And they can, by ceasing to do the functions, concentrate on sitting there doing nothing until they get their bond indebtedness paid off. And then at that point, dissolve, but they can't walk out from under it as long as they have a bond indebtedness.
Has it ever happened? Anybody knows that
Now we've got one little town of Saldovia now that Urban Renewal took away. All you've got is the fringes left, and their only hope is dissolution. There's just not enough there to carry a town. Yet they still have the bond of indebtedness for a water system that was voted in by people who no longer live there.
Well, you have to be free of debt, or if in debt, each of your creditors must be satisfied with a method of repayment, as well as the 2-year ceasing exercise powers. That's how it's covered under present law, and that is contained in the code.
What's the population of Saldovia now, Clem? What's the population of Saldovia?
About 400 people.
There are a lot of communities up here that size that are,
they're
not first class, but they're...
themselves for a water system to serve 5 canneries that Urban Renewal took away.
Took the canneries away?
They took the canneries away. The cannerymen grabbed their money and left. It was under condemnation, so they didn't have to reinvest it. And they just pulled out and left. And about, over half of the people went along with the, left when the canneries left. So what you have is a bond of debt. They have 21 mil taxes there to pay off debts that were incurred.
Who provides the school? Oh, that's a borough, isn't it?
It's a borough school. So yes, in those cases, why they can probably find their way out. In fact, the borough, I'm sure, would be willing to make them a service area for the retirement of that bond of indebtedness. Hmm. And just let them drop out, but nobody, no business will ever build there while they have that mill rate, and they have no way to get rid of the mill rate.
Isn't it also true, Clem, that at the time of the Urban Renewal, all the canneries that were going to get paid from the condemnation said, we'll stay, and when they got their money, they all left?
I stood up in the city council there and said, if you give them their money, you'll never see them again. For the price of canned salmon, they're crazy to rebuild. I don't care what they say to you. Fine.
Well, I was going to say, that's fascinating, but we've got to better keep on this. One other point that's, I think, important to realize, too, on this, though, nobody that presently does not have the school power, regardless of their size, will be forced to take the school power without a favorable vote of the people involved, regardless of...
That's crystal clear, yeah.
Okay, any person registered to vote, not only a person who votes, may contest an election. And if he succeeds, the borough will pay for the recount. If he loses, he must pay the costs.
I have a question on that other
one. I'm sorry. Oh, you had a question on...
Yeah, I had a question on section 2923560.
All right.
Are you doing away with home rule and general law cities and making them into second-class cities now under this section? Were you adding a section then?
Right.
In the bill on page 30...
Yeah, what page? What
line 8... Section 2923560 and reports home rule in general law municipality shall file with the local affairs agency and so forth. But over here in this, now, are you going to add this? Second class cities? Which will
yes.
be turned, a fourth class city will be turned into second class city. Are you just adding that to this section?
What we're saying is that in the case of a second class city, which is presently a fourth class city, it doesn't have to be this CPA type audit. It can be a simple expenditure.
Yeah, but I just wonder, are you doing away with the home rule type, or do you just leave that in there? Home rule and general law cities shall file with the local affairs agency. Is that taken out of the bill?
No, home rule will still be required to, what this will be an exception, as I recall.
You see what he's saying, Greg? Yes, that's right, Mr. Chairman. What Mr. Miller is saying is right.
Add it?
Yeah, we'll just add
home
it
rule
an
governments and first and second class cities will be required to file the reports, except that second class won't have to file them all.
Right.
See, general law includes second class, Greg. See, home rule, the term general law would include first and second class, and that's presently the fourth, on line 8 on page 30.
It's defined in the
In the definition section of the bill. See?
Okay, moving on. Any person registered to vote, not only a person who votes, may contest an election. And if he succeeds, the borough will pay for the result. If he loses, he must bear the costs. Any question about that?
In case there's any question on the floor, and this comes up, I think the present law is that you must be a voter to contest the election. And obviously, you may have been out of town fishing or hunting and you didn't happen to vote, but you were registered. We think you ought to have the right to go after him anyways.
You register after the election?
Well...
You're a registered voter at the time of suit, as far as I'm concerned. They're pretty liberal in letting people sue now.
And I think if you're registered and showing interest, you should be able to sue. Instead of present law, which says you've got to be a voter. Is that all?
No, it doesn't bind.
Okay, go on to the next page. When a borough proposes on its official map to reserve lands for public use, it must notify the persons on and adjacent to such lands. Just an additional safeguard for the people that be directly affected, but yet aren't the people that actually own the property. Fairly non-controversial.
I thought that we don't have an official map statute yet that's been under consideration.
It's in the bill.
Well, there's a special section in the bill. Now, this is one of the new things about the code. The code has a provision in there that a city, at its option, it's not a mandatory thing, but it may permissively adopt these official maps, which sets aside, specifies which blocks and stuff like that are going to be for recreation, future streets, and that sort of thing. And if the city does indeed opt to go this route, then each person that owns land will be notified, and not only the person that owns land, but also the people who are adjacent to such land.
Mr. Chairman, I have terrible problems with official map legislation because it seems to me that it's basically an effort by planners to get around the constitutional provision that property shan't be taken for public use without compensation. What happens is you take a subdivision into the Greater Anchorage Area Borough, and they say, well, if we're going to approve this plat, we want a 60-foot street adjacent to an existing 60-foot street for future expansion if we ever go to four lanes. And if you've got a 40-acre tract that's 2,500 feet long and 60 feet times that comes to an acre of ground, which cost you, or half an acre of ground, which ground is selling for $20,000 or $25,000. And they arbitrarily say, no approval of your plat until you dedicate the 60 feet. And we have some of us have successfully defeated them on prior occasions by saying, go jump in the river. If you want this land for an expansion into a four-lane highway, you got to pay us for it. But the whole official map concept comes from a desire by these planning boards, and I like planning boards, to take land from you, or they say, we want this 20 acres set aside as a public park. Well, you might have $100,000 in that 20 acres. And from that standpoint, official map legislation gives me a terrible hang-up. I've said my speech.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's been concern in the both in the drafting of the code and also on the subcommittee on that very point. And the code specifies that if a city does indeed adopt an official map and lays these out, then the person whose property is affected can give official notification of his desire to use that property. And then the city then only has 1 year, and they either have to buy him out or else they lose their option to reserve the lands that way.
Mr. Chairman, who pays the interest on their money during the year? Is that just a risk of life under this system?
The interest on what money?
On the money that you borrowed to buy the ground that they're going to let sit for a year.
Now, you're lining into something that's the whole thing of zoning. What about the fella, say, Evanson out there at Sand Lake? If they'd come along, if the borough had come along and zoned that agricultural before he had sold it, he'd never have been able to subdivide it. Do you feel he has a claim after having his area zoned at no change?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may respond,
sure.
Zoning regulations there's been all kinds of litigation on them. There's all kinds of standards. The statute has to treat everybody equally, et cetera, et cetera. And zoning regulations are one thing, but there's a great hue and cry in Anchorage right now for official map legislation so that, they can say, if you've got a 160-acre tract, we're going to take 20 of it for a park. And I don't see that this particularly solves that problem. Because if they say, okay, if they're going to take 20 of it for a park, and if they don't pay you within a year, then you get, I guess you get your 20 back. But in the meantime, you don't have the 20, you don't have the use of the 20, and it sits in limbo. And I'm in favor of parks, too, in addition to planning commission.
Couldn't they do this with zoning right today by just saying and such an area?
You can't zone private. At the present time, you can't zone private land for a public use.
No, 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 I'm not saying zone it for a private use. Just say
no, for a public use.
Zone it for the use that it is now held at. You don't actually take possession away, but they can zone it and say this is this you may only have one house per every 40 acres. You've got one house on a 40-acre piece now, and they can just flat hold you to that, can't they?
Oh, well, yeah, we can do that at the present time.
But yes,
yes, sir. That's all they need to do to hold it.
I don't think that's all they have. If they do that to me, they're going to court.
Well, we discussed this before, yeah. Mr. Chairman. We discussed what does it mean when you say you have to make a plan, apply for a permit and all the rest of it. I'm inclined, I would make the motion now to delete the official map section, except that we're not at that stage, I guess.
Can I mention something here?
Yeah.
Look on page 46, line 14 to 23, John.
Yeah.
This is the... only basic argument I think that can be to meet Cliff's, and it's a real compromise, and we're torn between public interest and private property taken. And read it, and notice it says on page 46, lines 14 to 23. You notice the right to give written notice to the assembly announces intention to build on this land covered by the reservation, and if the city doesn't do something within a year, or the municipality. To put improvements and actually make it a road, then they got it. I mean, that's admittedly, it's a piece of pie or a piece of bread.
But why not just require them if they want this for a road to commence condemnation proceedings now? I mean, why is there any reason why I should hold it for a year while they decide whether or not to commence condemnation proceedings?
I guess it goes right to the preface of the section. The purpose of official map on page 44, lines 10 to 17, tells you exactly the theory behind it.
Well, I agree with Senator Grove that this is really an attempt to get around the confiscation of property, private property for a public purpose, by creating a burden and a cumbersome method here of development. And it seems to me that we have all the condemning powers in the world, we have everything we need, the declaration of taking and everything else, and that if cities and boroughs know what they want to do, and when they decide what they want to do and they're willing to pay for it, they can do it. Until they can decide what they want to do and are willing to pay for it, they can't do it. And they got to make that hard decision. And there's no reason why a citizen should be penalized because of their inability to make that decision then.
John, you're very articulate. Let me ask you, Bill, now you're going to have to give some help, because I'm sure that if John and Cliff both get up on the Senate floor and argue this way, I can count the votes right now. And what do you think? What was the thinking of the drafting committee on this provision? Because if we don't get some good arguments, my inclination is not to fight that argument on the floor. And I don't think the House members are going to be very successful in fighting it either.
You're very articulate and just stated my position as well.
Let me start out by saying,
Bill, come on, you better start doing some quick talk.
That I don't consider this section worth the bill if it comes down to that. The thinking, though, in support of this section.
Jesus, thanks, boy. Go ahead.
Well, we feel strongly about getting the bill. The thinking in support of this section is that, by and large, highway and right-of-way planning is not something that you immediately decide that you want a right-of-way and are in a position to go out and acquire the right-of-way. There is normally about a year's lead-up period in your planning, your surveying, your laying out before you can actually fix a location in which a public improvement will lie. You can't say the road's going to run here, go out and acquire the property and build. It is not that simple. In the meantime, all this does is prevent the cost of acquisition going up substantially while you're in the process of laying out the road.
At the expense of whom?
A building, for example, that would be put up in the road during that period would have to be condemned out. The property owner would have really gained nothing by this.
Well,
though he would get compensated for the building, but you never quite get fully made whole anyway with the building that you've just built. So the property owner, in effect, is held during the studying period.
Hey, boy, I can picture this going down the tube.
Good. Oh,
I mean, this point, this would die. Good, Red, and then Clem. I'm sorry, your chairman. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Clem.
Yeah, what I'm wondering about, if you want to give them these powers, then you have to work in something where if they don't immediately condemn and hold for a year, you've got to have some compensation for that year's loss, at least the interest on that amount, the going interest for that amount of time that you have tied up that man's property. And if they want this in here, they might agree to go that route. To where, you know, if you lay out a street through a person's land and say you've got to give another 60 feet in your easement before you develop this area, and then change your mind a year later and decide you're not going to do it. You owe him the interest for that period of time. You should owe it to him anyway. Can you work that out, John?
Well, Mr.
I think the thing to do is delete the section myself. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Just delete the official map section.
Red first.
Go ahead.
Senator?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are various jurisdictions that are dealing with the problem for future parklands and for future highways. And what they do is, if one of the planning groups comes along and says, we want this in the future, what they say, okay, you've got to pay for it, as Mr. Grader says now. They say, you can designate anything anytime in the future, but you've got to make your present determination. And they're all kind, I mean, and this can amount to very substantial sums of money around something like Sand Lake. You've got a half mile there, 100 feet wide that they want. That's 256,000 square feet. That's 6 acres, and that land out there is selling at 10,000 an acre. And you're suddenly into $60,000 while somebody tries to figure out whether to condemn you or not to condemn you.
I'm not arguing.
I understand that.
I don't think there's any point in discussing it too far, because I think the sense of the committee is to delete the section, isn't it? Probably.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
John, I'm sure that it's going to be deleted, yeah. But may I suggest something? Why don't we consider, because it's a drafting problem, they're tearing this thing out to refer to another section, why don't we consider having Greg draft on an amendment in here saying any street that's reserved for future taking, they must pay right now. But you see, in other words, you got your existing streets that, of course, are in part of the plat. But any street in there that's shown for future taking, they pay market value for it right now.
Well, then there's no point in all this mess about waiting a year on permits and official maps.
Well, the first part of it, you know, the map itself is a good concept. The whole idea.
You can do this, of course, now, then.
Yeah, that's what you do right now.
I don't think you need a change in law to allow them.
No, that's exactly what the law is, really.
Well, I'm afraid you made a good argument.
Well, that's what the meeting's for.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, it's not binding on home rule governments, incidentally. I think that's one distinction we have to understand here.
Yeah.
Unless it says either in that index of home rule provisions,
let's take a vote on
page 6 of the code, that it binds home rule government, only binds the general law governments. This official map one does not bind the home rule government.
No, but it gives them authority to exercise a certain dominion over the citizens, what we object to. All governments, if they want to exercise it, then they would probably exercise it.
Yeah, dear, let's resolve this right now. With permission of the Senate Chairman, I'll just call for a vote. How many are in favor of deleting this section?
I defer to my chairman.
How many are in favor of retaining this section? We've solved a lot of problems. The provisions of permitting substitute for House Bill 86, providing that home rule and general law municipalities may change their names by an ordinance ratified by the voters or included in the bill. Oh, that's just simply adopting something that's already been adopted this year.
This year.
Yeah. Okay. Second-class boroughs may, by ordinance, exercise garbage and solid waste disposal in the area outside cities.
Powers. Should be garbage and waste disposal powers.
You know, Mr. Chairman?
Here we go again.
Well, I mean, I got a resolution, I guess all of you did, from it. It's Joint Anchorage and Fairbanks City Councils, asking that this be included in the code for urban renewal and a lot of reasons, I imagine. But I got it. Did you get a copy of the resolution? I think I even got it in the file.
It's in the Anchorage package.
Is that in the Anchorage? Well, I got it at Fairbanks and Anchorage City Councils.
This is one of the sections that I wasn't at right at the moment when this was decided. Does this tend to rescind the House bill that we just passed relative to garbage?
That's right.
Rescind? What's your House bill say?
The House bill that we just passed said that if a borough wanted to, or the a city in newly annexed areas, would have to buy out any garbage collection service that it wanted. In other words, it couldn't compete with them. It could either buy them out or else keep that garbage service intact.
You mean John's bill?
Yeah.
It would be up in the Senate. That'll
be your garbage bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
This refers to boroughs, not cities. This refers to a second-class borough assuming a power in the area outside cities without a vote of the people.
Oh, this really doesn't have anything
to
do with
that. No, it doesn't have anything to do with that.
Those provisions enacted last year that are being amended now are in the code.
Now, this comes affects also 293.325.0 and on, doesn't it, where under the present provisions regarding acquisition of additional area-wide powers, it's unclear whether second-class boroughs may acquire additional area-wide powers by transfer from the city. I think we should clarify it all right. We shouldn't let them.
What page are you on?
Well, I'm on page 7 of your synopsis, not your smaller one, your next one up. The other one that's underneath this one.
Oh, you mean the amendments, I suppose. Amendments.
Oh, the summary?
Yeah. And that covers page 54 on your bill. But it covers the same, the matter of picking up additional powers via your powers held by a first-class city. And this is a backdoor way of a borough picking up powers that the people haven't voted on. Page 7, right in the middle.
Page 7.
That's not 7 on the bill, that's 7 on the summary.
Yeah, this paragraph that starts out under the current provisions regarding the acquisition of additional.
Yeah.
It is unclear whether second class boroughs may acquire additional outside area-wide powers by transfer from the city. The provision explicitly allows this.
Yes, that's true. The question has been raised whether a first class city now, or rather a second class borough, may assume a power by transfer from a first class city. This makes clear that they may.
How about making it clear the other way?
Pardon me?
Let's make it clear the other way. My voters assume that they're going to have a chance to vote on any new powers picked up by the borough. And I just assumed that this was true. This was one of the selling points of the time. Now that nothing could be fostered on them without their consent. And now by a backdoor method, you're going to allow it. And I'd say that should be written just the opposite, that no powers of a first-class city may be transferred to an area outside that first-class city without a vote of the people.
Well, let me make it clear. We're talking about two different approaches, I think, here, Mr. Tillian. The provision you're referring to talks about the exercise by the borough within a city of a power transferred by the city to the borough. It doesn't refer to the exercise outside the city of that power by the borough. The provision in the code permits a city, by vote of its council, to transfer a function within the city to the borough to exercise.
Within the city?
Within the city. All the provision in the proposed amendment that Mr. Miller raised here, we're on now, talks about what powers a borough may exercise outside a city without going to a vote of the people if it's a second-class borough. See, it's two different
things. Okay, now where is that part? I don't object to them exercising those powers of a first-class city within the city, but I strongly object to them spreading outside of the city without a vote of the people.
Certain of these powers have been granted already to second-class boroughs without a vote. They are dog control and fireworks control, also
flood control.
Motor vehicle control.
Flood control.
Wait a second. We had some of these granted. The fireworks were by legislative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
A special act or a special amendment to the borough acts have said that a second-class borough can do this without going to a vote of the people in the area outside cities.
And that was our action.
Well, that's
the legislature.
Yeah.
All right. No kick on that.
Right. Now, this adds two others, garbage and waste disposal powers. The others are also retained in the code here.
The best argument we heard in the subcommittees, Clem, was in this area of ecology and environmental matters. And it certainly is pertaining to solid waste disposal, because we're in that field and that field alone. And they decided that the precedent established by the legislature, mainly given in powers without a vote of the people, could only be logically argued and rationalized if you kept it into an area such as air pollution control or solid waste control or pollution matters, rather than just a raw naked power like road maintenance or something of that nature. And that was the only rationalization for it. And furthermore, they felt that you'd never be able to participate and get federal grant funds under pollution control matters and so forth unless boroughs had this anti-litter, anti-pollution power that they're given in solid waste disposal. And furthermore, finally, the clincher was the two city councils, two major cities, wanting to give it to their second-class boroughs in that area. And so the committee knew it was, you could, you know, logically argued against it because it wasn't the vote of the people, but in balance, nobody's trying to hide it. It's right before the committee now. You're getting solid waste in the area of pollution control for second-class boroughs without a vote of the people. It's not back door, Clem. It's right in the front door. I mean, it's just that simple.
And this bill is kind of backdoor, because the average person will never get it.
But we intend to put this in a supplemental journal, Mr. Chairman, and we intend to and put on every senator and representative's desk the exact amendments to this bill. Our feeling, Clem, is this. If the committee puts it in, and if somebody on the floor, we figure that if we let it up for debate, and then if they want to knock it out, it's a good thing to argue. It's a good one, rather than the committee killing it, and just leaving status quo on that point. And that was basically what the subcommittee considered and argued. And that's it. And I admit that give it to the vote of the people was the easiest thing to do. But in any event, that's it. There's nothing else to say.
Well, I think
let's move on.
No, let's rather than I voted against the other extension of power.
Obligation to go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll come back for a decision on these. But let's, as much as one thing kind of interconnects with another, I'd kind of, before we make too many decisions, like to read the whole thing. Cities will adopt and enforce building, housing, and related codes for the area inside the cities. And boroughs will exercise this function in areas outside cities, unless a borough and a city agree to have the former exercise this function area-wide.
That?
Senator Hanson?
Does this include plumbing code?
Yes.
Do the boroughs presently have plumbing codes adopted? Does anyone know?
Greg?
I don't know whether any boroughs have what is called a plumbing code exclusively. The subject has come up mostly in terms of building codes, and the law now has been interpreted to mean that the borough can exercise it area-wide to the exclusion of a city. The city would have no choice as granted in the code here to retain it. As far as plumbing codes being within the ambit of area-wide planning, platting, and zoning power, I would say not.
No, it's building code.
Building code, yes,
but
a plumbing code, I would think, would not be would be a power you would have to assume. You're talking about the city or borough? Borough? No, they'd have to assume it in the area outside cities, I would think, except the first class borough. They'd have to assume it by vote of the people in the area outside cities. A plumbing code.
Is a building code a part of the planning function?
Not according.
The attorney general has declared it is.
Well, then they automatically have that as a mandatory power.
I know, but this code backs off on that.
I see.
Very controversial.
Okay, I see what you're saying. All right. That is the chairman.
Sig wanted to say something.
I was just going to say that I think the boroughs have the authority to adopt technical codes right now by ordinance. And that would include plumbing and electrical codes.
Because of their zoning power. Or planning,
but
general
planning. There's a specific statute section that authorized them to adopt, by reference, these codes. Is that not correct?
Well, a second-class borough right now, the way I see it, can exercise any power a first-class city can exercise in the area outside cities, except that the power has to be granted by vote of the people. I would think this would apply to plumbing codes.
Well, there's some mandatory powers.
The mandatory powers are planning, platting, and zoning, tax assessment and collection, education, and...
That's what I say. Is a plumbing code, housing code, a part of the planning and function, zoning function?
It's not been made clear under the Borough Act. I say it is not. A building code is, according to the Attorney General.
All right, but we've report to clarify. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of this paragraph, is to clarify and just simply say cities will adopt and enforce it within the cities, boroughs will do it outside the cities, and then if they opt to give the power to the borough, all the better yet.
Is it a mandatory power of a second-class borough to have a plumbing and zoning and building code outside the city or not?
Zoning and building, not plumbing.
Not plumbing.
Mr. Berry,
they still have to have an election. Okay.
John's got a good point, because this came up.
We still don't know what we're talking about then if we disagreed here, do we?
No, this settles it in the code. The present law is ambiguous on it, I think.
Mr. Chairman,
the
problem has really arisen in Anchorage, where the city building department doesn't want to give up its power. Planning department of the borough says it has the power over building codes, and we've had a hassle over it. And this purports to clarify this.
And make it what?
And make it which. If they agree to give it to the borough, then it's the borough. If they don't agree, then they both keep it.
Well, but if they don't agree and they both keep it, is it a mandatory function outside the borough?
Or is it an optional function outside the city? It's mandatory.
The area-wide powers are mandatory area-wide powers are education, taxation, and planning. Now, my question is...
Planning and zoning.
Now, my question is, under the law here, as you're proposing to make it, is a plumbing and a building code a part of the mandatory power, or will it be acquired by a vote outside the city?
It is not a mandatory power under this code.
Okay.
And it's not.
All right. That's what I want to know. And it would have to be acquired then by a vote.
That's right. Unless by agreement the borough and the borough and city agree that the borough will exercise it for the city. The city would have to agree to it.
No worry about that, John.
What if we treat it like any other power of a first-class city and just said that the boroughs didn't exercise it then unless they voted to assume it? Are we giving it a special status here? You can't.
Yes, sir, you are.
You're saying that there's one power here that's different than all the rest of them, and that is that, and that's the plumbing, the zoning, or the building code problem. And that is that instead of adopting that power by a vote or having it be an area-wide power by virtue of mandatory power, it's one of those that can be created area-wide or partially area-wide by an agreement.
No, correction. I now recall it. I'm sorry. The building code can be exercised within the city by the borough if there's an agreement.
Okay.
It cannot be exercised in the second-class borough outside the city without having been assumed by the usual
with
process.
An election.
Yes.
All right.
I'm
okay.
Sorry. I stand no. Correct.
Clem, you like that?
No, I don't mind that at all.
Well, Senator. Chairman, in dealing with, where are you going next?
Mr. Barrier, he was wanting to say something. Well, I think the point's been clarified. Essentially, the electrical, the plumbing, and the housing codes are ancillary codes to the building codes. And if you have the building code authority, these are ancillary authorities, not something distinct. I can't accept the distinction that you can make a distinction between having the authority for building code and the authority for a plumbing code, because others are ancillary.
Yeah. No. But they are not a part of the mandatory zoning and planning function.
Matter of fact, I think they currently are.
Well, under this statute, though, they will not be.
Under this statute, they would not be.
Part of that mandatory function.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that would be a change.
Versus Attorney General and the Borough Attorney's opinion. What it does. We did it deliberately.
Well, now let me ask you this. Does this mean that the boroughs that are exercising those powers now, then, are going to be wiped out the day we enact this? Are any of them exercising those powers?
Mr. Chairman, I believe in Fairbanks, the borough is exercising the building code power, and if the city doesn't agree to continue it that way, and the borough doesn't agree to continue it that way, then it will revert.
And didn't somebody from Fairbanks tell us that if they didn't do that, they couldn't get federal funds, and if we wiped out their power without a savings clause, that they were in great trouble?
This was brought up.
Jeopardized their insurance and a few other things?
You
took care of it, huh?
Didn't Warren Christensen say they are in Sitka also? By agreement.
We've got a savings clause.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
We know that. That's the borough attorney would have gotten fired to have a savings clause.
Just an audit. I've got an additional question on this when we get ready to make a decision myself, but I'll go on to do that. General law cities may, as under existing law, exempt or exclude civic centers and boats from property tax by ordinance. They may grant additional exemptions and exclusions by an ordinance ratified by the voters.
Is that new?
No, you got the Ings from Bell on that. That should have been taken off of the books years ago, where they're allowed to charge 5 and 15 for boats instead of true value. And that's something that should have been cleaned up a long time ago.
Is somebody exempting civic or taxing civic centers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, under present law, an amendment added to present law, these were exempted by an amendment a couple of years ago. So this is just continued in the code. Civic centers operated by non-profit corporations is what they're referring to, not municipally owned.
That's property. A separate piece of legislation, John.
This is in the present statute. The boat exemption is also permitted by ordinance, so they do not carry over into the code the $5 to $15 figure. They can set whatever flat fee they want to set.
Boy, that's a raw one, I tell you.
Well, you're really saying here they can grant anything by ordinance exemption.
Then they can grant additional exemptions by ordinance ratified by the people.
Well, then really you're just saying they can make any exemption they want to by ordinance, and that includes boats.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Specifically, I'll bring up bills 402 and 401. The 402 and 403, which is the last municipal bond that actually this governor's bill, and seeing about that chance, at least give it a first review. Frankly, this is, in spite of this late hour, pretty vital legislation. I'd like to see at least move out of this committee into finance, and then hopefully I'd like to see it move out of finance on the floor in a reasonable time, so maybe at least pass this House, this session, in some form or another. if anybody has any questions, Mr. Barrett says possibly can get some answers or explore
them. What is the lead position on government? Sir, what's the lead position of government for all of Britain? Would be in favor of most any vehicle which would give us this complete.
Well, you know, this is a bill which it seems to me was in the appropriate bill to have if we didn't have some money in the bank somewhere.
Anybody want a moment, a few minutes more to look it over? Do we have a motion on the floor? Very last thing, the short title is the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority Act. That's the short title. I don't know what the long title is.
One thing I can't quite understand is why we're not pledging the credit of the state to get a better rate of interest. All we're doing is creating a $15 million fund and the collective credit of the municipality. There doesn't seem to be going to get that much of an edge.
Well, I know that various bond people who testified on the bill last year said that it's pretty well understood that the faith and credit of the state would be behind it, even though it might not be specific.
Well, I guess that is
the attitude that they have seen.
Now, this is what the bond buyers regard the situation as, rather than from them.
Plus, when they compute the state's bond indebtedness versus the population, if it doesn't specifically tie in here, our statistically our situation, I think, is a lot better as an actual fact. I think Tom's right. I think they know deep in their hearts that the last is not going to let the thing go belly up, even if it's beyond the $15 million.
Did you say they had this bill in the legislature last year?
No.
What did you say?
Oh, we had the same bill as Mr. Whitaker's the same time. And if you remember, they had that special bond investment, the special monetary fund committee last year, and it never moved out of there.
Well, Chair, would there be a motion? Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I want to vote in favor of the bill out here today. I haven't read anywhere. Well, I wouldn't be in favor of looking it out today.
Well,
you can move it out with a one due pass if you want to.
Yeah, well, I really wouldn't want to send out with just one due pass, but I wouldn't object, you know, three and one no rec or something like that. That'd be fine.
But I intend to vote due pass.
So do I. Now, from an agenda standpoint, I'm kind of exposed to it one way or another. This is 402, Mike, in the Governor's Municipal Bond Bank Authority bill.
But I don't think I'll ask unanimous consent.
In that case, it makes it easier more on the frame.
Mr. Chairman, would you rather not hold it one day?
I would rather not, but I mean, I'm not hung up on it. I don't have any great feelings on the
thing. We've
still got, you know, findings to go on, thank you so much. But I'm just, with current rumors, if you believe we're going to be looking at budgets in the very near future, and I'm just fearful of anything that's kind of a non-budget item once that process starts.
Interesting, Mr. Belling, on page 3, line 2, the appointment of each director other than the commissioner generally is subject to conformation by
budgets. That may not be misspelling. we'll bring that to the attention of the I don't think that takes a formal amendment, but I think
I think Mr. Chairman, any bill that's got a $15 million impact, and we're going to all of a sudden give authority to the local funding, to the local governments, I think that it should have more than a 5-minute or a 10-minute look over.
Yeah.
Well, of a bill of this importance, this amount of money, that we've been fiddling around here for 80 days over bills that, and we've wrangled and jangled over bills that didn't have any implication at all.
Yeah, well,
now, all of a sudden, we're going to pass a $15 million authority here right in the last couple of minutes of the session.
Well, not all of a sudden, something. Well, this thing came up Wednesday. We gave
the bill has, what, it's 402 and what? 402 and 403?
Yeah, we heard
4771?
We heard the testimony from the Commissioner of Revenue on Wednesday and asked everybody to read it over and look it over if they had any questions so that we could pass it out on Friday. Now, if you don't want to pass it out on Friday, I can care less. Well, no, but it's not a 5-minute operation. We've been in possession of the facts for at least 48 hours. If somebody has some questions, great, let's raise them.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate what Red's saying. I appreciate his concern, but I think that what we have to do in this committee is to limit ourselves to the interest of local government, which in this case is not a technical interest. The technical review of the bill, I think, of loans and finance. Our policy question is this something which is going to be beneficial to local governments? And I think there's no question of what it is. It doesn't give them any additional powers. It doesn't do anything except create another place where they can sell bonds at a saving to local taxpayers. And I think that's the basic question before us. And I think that, even though we just are now looking at this particular bill, we've all been aware of the problem that we've had in various communities and selling bonds. Will not create a situation whereby communities can sell bonds if they couldn't have sold otherwise. This simply makes it a little bit easier for the bonds to be sold once the community has gone through the processes. And it also, hopefully, allows for a better rate of interest, better terms and conditions, which is nothing but savings to taxpayers and so on. And that's why I'm in favor of moving it out and getting it to finance right away. The budget, I think, is going to be tied down here within the next day or two. If we don't get it to them, why then they can't consider it.
I'd like to ask someone to do the consideration of page 4, section 4458, 4612, conservation expenses directed to the bond bank 30 to serve on conservation. The bond bank 30 should reimburse its directors for actual expenses necessary to turn this started to do it.
Well, in other words, when they sell, they wouldn't be on per diem. They would be
on per diem, but on a different
series.
Yeah.
They could live in the
capital
company
and
delay
it
every night and charge the lightest
day. I don't think this is out of the ordinary. I think if you go per diem route or this, I think it's kind of up to the administrator. They're accountable. And of course, all the people who submit their vouchers have to go through pre-audit and stuff like this. I wouldn't read this as saying that the guy charged the plate, stating the president's and everything else, that he would necessarily get all that money back, because I think actual expenses would necessarily incurred. I don't think anybody would construe that you could run up a $100 bill to Captain Cook and call it necessarily incurred. If you'd prefer to put in just a simple per diem type statement.
Or reasonable actual expenses.
Well, I think this is a little bit unique, and this is the first time I've run into any compensation clause. Thanks on this clause, sir.
Well, certainly amenable to amendment, if you want.
Well, what the compensation clause says is that thou shalt not be compensated. And then it talks about expenses.
But then that says thou shalt be compensated.
Yeah, for expenses.
Not compensated, but reimbursed.
Well, reimbursed is compensation. Depends on the amount. I don't see that these people are any different than any of our other boards. I would like to see that piece to be, you know, without causing us a major, I'm not attempting to kill them.
Yeah, right. Well,
delay or anything, but I might have considerations.
I think we can get a standard per diem type statement without any problem from legislative affairs. And so if you wanted to just move that as an amendment, I can, before I turn the thing in, I can show you that.
I would move it as an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That change.
This is the standard $35 a day per diem. You're talking about whatever it is that most of the other boards and one thing that they get. All right, I'll say all. Entertain that amendment, and then I'll throw in this one thing. I'll bring this to the attention of the Commissioner of Revenue to see if he had some particular thing in mind. And if he did, then I'll bring it back to you Monday without going through the thing.
Fair enough.
The motion is, then, should this be amended to contain just the standard type premium clause that we find in most boards and commissions? I don't know, for instance, what the Alaska Development Bank or ASHA, but those are comparable organizations. So what's the number? Do you ask unanimous consent?
Yes.
Is there objection? If not, still carry none of those conditions. Then. Anybody have any additional questions? Will you make a note to check with legislative affairs and have them phrase up a standard deal like that? Aside from the fact that we're running out of time this morning, I don't particularly want to hurry, but is everybody ready for the question on the adoption?
Adoption of the bill? What do you mean?
Well, Mr. Whitaker's got a motion before us on the adoption of the bill. And I either want to adopt it today or else if the majority wants to wait, fine. But I don't particularly want to sit here while everybody reads it in committee.
Well, all you need to move it is one we pass.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's correct. There'll be a two, so...
Well, it can be.
Certainly.
The bill could either get a do pass or a no recommendation out of me. It might get a no recommendation out of me on Monday or Tuesday. But it's today, it'll get a do not pass.
Yeah. Well, that's your option.
That's right.
Yeah, it's...
Because there are some things in this bill that should be amended in local government, not in finance. I don't see any limitation on the amount of interest that the local government can sell their bonds under, which is probably... is not in here, which I think is the state.
Why should it be there? And why should it be there? They've already got limitations.
They have the alternative, rather going for market.
Sale bonds, just like the university did up there, for what, 9 or 10%?
No, they can do it. I mean, I'm saying the local government can now go to the bond market, or if they can get a better deal from the state bond authority. But they're already limited. Now, this doesn't change what a municipality can do, except to give it a state agency that can go to sell its bonds.
This bill gives the authority to the bonding authority, which we're creating here, bonding authority, and they can sell bonds at any interest rate, whether it's 2% or 10%. And there's no limitation in this bill.
There's no limitation now on municipal bonds, unless a local municipality puts it in the charter.
Well,
you know, I think we've got
if the state can't sell bonds at a lower rate than the municipalities, then there's no reason to have this, because the only reason for having this is to save money for municipalities.
Any more questions? More debate? No, I'll call for the question. Anybody in favor of passing it out? If you pass, raise your hand. Opposed?
I won't vote no recommendation.
Yeah, right. I understand.
I'm for no recommendation.
Okay, sorry. That's where it'll be. Get her moving. Now, the other thing we've got.
Please understand that I'm not fighting.
No.
No.
No. I know. I understand perfectly. No problem.
I'll move House Bill 403 also.
Oh yes. Yeah. Excuse me. I think about that. House 403. House Bill 403 is the company $15 million appropriations to accompany this. Anticipating at least some objection. All in favor of House Bill 403, raise your hands. Opposed? That's too fast.
I'm opposed.
All right. Everybody votes their conscience.
So I wish we did.
Well, I'm voting mine.
I'm not suggesting we
have this. $100 million in debt under this authority.
No way.
There's a limitation here, says it. Says that this, you can limit yourself to $100 million.
That's the state. That's this banking authority owner. The communities, this the rules, and in regard to the community, have to change a little bit. What the community does is do exactly everything it's in there as a state. This is just another market. Hopefully you save money.
And the original committee bill. As a matter of fact, I think they're even preparing a summary of a summary, which is more or less condensed about, you know, news release type language and form. But anyway, these summaries will be incorporated into the journal as part of the committee report so that the House members can study not only the bill itself, which is hard to study, being as many pages long as it is, but also they can study these with a little bit more ease.
We have another thing to correct that.
No, I'm glad you mentioned it. That's page 3.
What these people in the initial one they got
conformed with
that.
Yeah, that may not have been a typo.
You could have been over there. All right. The bomb thing I actually like.
Now, as I say, back to the municipal code. We've got it out now in its final committee substitute form.
I'll be right out. Oh, that's me.
I'll sign the other, need to walk out.
I'll be back.
One's the financial backup for the $50 million, the other's the actual bond authority itself. Now, if we have time, and if the committee is so inclined, we could pass this bill out today so people would have the weekend to look it over. Plus, I'm going to ask the rules chairman to spend 2 or 3 more days.
I'll be back.
You'll be back?
Don't pass that bill. I'll be back.
Okay. That hurts.
Yes, sir.
Frankly, my own choice would be, I'd like to get this on the floor so people can start studying.
I feel the same way. Hey, you know, here we can roll that thing around here for another half hour, and we're not going to do any, you know, I'm in favor. I vote for a new pass. Let's get it out of here. Yeah. I think we've gone and rolled, and there's
got to get on the floor and get rehashed again. I'm not satisfied that all has been done that can be done without...
I'm at Renner to hold it all over the weekend, but also 2 or 3 days as well, so that everybody's going to have a... Okay, is that a motion?
I so move.
Okay. Then move that to a second that we move it out, do pass the municipal code.
No, I've got some amendments to the bill.
State, we're in the debate stage now, so state your amendments. Yes, sir.
Just like that?
Well, yeah.
Well, let's have the, what, I haven't even got the committee substitute that you put out, Mike. I've got nothing but the old bill here.
Well,
where's the draft that we were supposed to be able to look over? We're going to pass a bill out of this committee without even having a draft before? We're going to pass out a title?
Every one of us is set through every one of these changes.
Right.
All right. Here's the draft.
Where's the draft here? There's nothing on my desk, only this.
There can't be until we pass it out. Until this bit
passes. Where's the changes that you made downstairs?
Oh, all right. I don't want to get into this. We'll just wait until Monday morning. I'll get the summary to you. I'll have Kathy Xerox copies of this, and it'll be sitting on your desk.
All right.
I'll have
a chance to go over what they've done downstairs.
Right, okay. Absolutely.
Have changes been made to the bill as originally printed?
As originally printed, yeah, there have been changes made. There's been all the changes that have been made are those changes that we agreed to, jointly, the two committees in joint meetings. So everybody should be totally aware of
it. Is this are we in here now?
In the committee substitute. Yeah, this is the original right here. Wherever the committee substitute is. This is the changes. All the changes that we all agreed on are in here. So if we need to have a draft in front of us, we'll have a draft in front of us. Anyway, wait another 4 weeks. We're adjourned. Keith.
I just
don't matter, gentlemen.
I can have this, so I can have a little weekend.
You'll have a little